Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Our focus is commercial real estate, exploring vital questions, confronting commercial landlords, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, tenants, and anyone providing services to the industry. Your host is Howard Klein. His commercial real estate practice over 35 years has concentrated on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented with the sole intent of educating listeners. Howard and his guests are specifically not offering legal advice. If you need legal advice, consult your own counsel. CRE Radio is available live and downloadable anytime at creradio.com. Call in during the live show with your comments or questions, 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Hello, everyone. This is Howard Klein. We are with CRE Radio. I am your host. Today's topic is guns, guards, and alarms. This, no question, is a pretty hot topic. Is that Dave Mystic on the line?
That it is, Howard. How are you?
Great. How are you doing, Dave?
Good.
So let me tell you a little bit about today's show. We're having a discussion about increasing security in malls and shopping centers in light of the Newton massacre and the Clackamas Town Center Mall outside Portland, all of which, and honestly, there are quite a few other gun-toting events that are pretty sad, and it seems to be almost an epidemic at this point in time. We have our featured guest, which I'm really excited to having, is Brian Cescalini. Or is that Cescalini, Brian?
Either way, the Italian name or the American.
Oh, okay.
Cescalini or Cescalini.
Thank you. Don't call you late to lunch. And Brian is the co-CEO of Universal Protection Services. And correct me if I'm wrong, you are one of the largest commercial guard services in the country, are you not?
Yes, we are now. We're one of the top five security companies in the U.S.
We also have David Mystic. And David, you are with Circumspects, correct?
That I am.
And David is a disaster preparedness expert. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's been on our show twice already. This will be his third appearance. Tells great stories, and he's a man who knows exactly what he's talking about. As a matter of fact, last time he was on the show, I spoke to him shortly after the Sandy hurricane. And he was in New York dealing with that, and his topics were very interesting. If anybody wants to listen to it, go to our website. And then we also have Dr. James Loria, who is a noted educator and author. James, your expertise is in training, military, and security. Is that correct?
Howard. I've been a trainer for a long time. I'm actually an active duty police officer. So I'm still in the street. We train a lot of active shooter. I train a lot of security guys. I do some security work on the side as well. So I'm there doing what I do.
All right, and Dr. Loria is actually David refers to him as his guru. So that comes with high praise. I want to remind anybody that if you'd like to call in and leave a comment or ask a question, you can do it live at 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be put in the queue. We will get to you if you'd like to speak to us, and I certainly encourage anybody to do that. For those who are a little shyer, should I say, you can also tweet to us at using the @ CRE Radio, at which time I will have the opportunity to see the tweets live and see if I can read your question or comments on the air. You could also leave comments after the show. The show will be pre-recorded. I don't need to tell anybody about that because you'll be able to listen later on. So let's talk a little bit, if I might, with my intro now about what the focus of the show is. We will be talking guns, to some extent. But understand, I really don't want to get into a debate as to whether or not there should be more gun controls or not. That's not really the purpose of this show, and I'll leave that up to Piers Morgan to handle that kind of discussion. Really, what my focus is for this particular show is how to make malls and shopping centers safer and make the buying public and the guests and the invitees of the retail tenants, how to make everybody feel safer. And that's really what we're going to be talking about. So I thought that the first question we should ask is, do we need more security at shopping centers and malls? And that is kind of generally speaking versus talking about a particular mall. And Brian, why don't we start with you? And by the way, gentlemen, buddy, without interrupting the other speaker, you can, if you have a comment, you don't have to wait for me to mention your name. Please step in when the other person is finished talking. So, Brian, what do you say?
Well, I think in general, the staffing at the malls are pretty well. I think that the property managers and the owners of and landlords of these malls stay in very close contact with their security directors to maintain the proper staffing during the work week and the weekends and when the holidays occur, that they refer to their security directors at these malls to maintain the proper staffing. But basically, security staff are really ambassadors, and that they're there to deal with the public. They're there to direct the shoppers to various locations, and they're there to act as deterrents against possible crimes that could take place. They have a host of other duties, but basically, you know, in most malls, they act as ambassadors of the mall, and they're in uniform, and they provide the dual purpose of providing security services and being the eyes and the ears of the mall, and also offer up public relations and the ambassador services there.
You know, Brian, this is Jim. That is exactly what is needed. But what I see out here on the East Coast is that they're hiring security agents. They're giving them a uniform, putting them in there, and they're not talking about customer service issues. You know, they're not talking about those things that are enticing to somebody to come in to a mall or to a retail establishment and feel comfortable. You know, I think maybe the training element is really missing in a lot of areas. We're talking about coming in and doing security, quote unquote. Well, there's much more to it than that.
Well, I think that's a good point. I don't think that Brian missed the point, but I think it is a good point because at some point when you provide this kind of – when you provide security – and people start talking about adding more security, you may cross a line where you actually start making the guests and customers uncomfortable. I mean, it's easy to determine how far you've gone when you look at the extremes. Number one, providing no security on one extreme, and on the other extreme, having gentlemen walking around with machine guns. Now, those are the extremes that you could tell about, and obviously I'm not – well, that's the question. One of the questions, are people going to feel uncomfortable with guards walking around with machine guns? Let me ask that question without assuming that I know the answer.
Well, let me jump into that just a second, Howard. When Brian made that comment, he didn't miss the point. I'm sure that that's the way he trains his guys, and I appreciate that. I think that's missing. That element is missing from a lot of companies that do mall security or retail security. I think Brian has it exactly right. I think it's being missed, though, in a lot of areas. I just wanted to clarify that point.
Yeah, well, I think that in the large major malls, we're talking about major malls, and then we're talking about strip shopping centers or campus-type shopping centers, and different mall environments bring in different security techniques. You know, if you have a mall in the middle of Watts, and, you know, there has to be a completely different a scenario of training versus if you have a very nice enclosed mall in Dallas, Texas. So it all depends on the environment and where it is, but training is the most important thing. And the other most important thing is how visible you make your security presence, the security awareness for the visitors or the shoppers that come to the mall. And they don't have to be armed. They just have to make sure that the shoppers and the customers feel safe, and you don't want to turn the mall into an environment where, you know, there's an armed guard at every entrance. You know, in my belief that there has to be a presence of security, but you can't make it to the point that customers will be afraid to even come to the mall.
Well,
go ahead, Dave.
Right.
We haven't heard from you.
Right. I think that it's the point's well made. You know, when you look at, for example, the Israeli examples, and we want to feel secure, we want to have some sense of comfort, and that it's a safe environment. But I think that the American public would. Although we've gotten used to, you know, such increased security measures at the airport and, you know, office buildings, industrial complexes, but the notion of taking the kids shopping and going through the metal detector or having the car inspected before you pull into the mall parking lot, I just can't imagine that we're willing to make that trade to get to that heightened sense of being safe and secure.
So Brian raised the issue. It depends upon where the mall. Well, he draws the distinction between a strip mall, regional mall, and perhaps even a larger major mall, should I say? And Brian also distinguishes where the mall or shopping center is located. Let me ask this question. In some places, and I don't mean Watts, but in Southern California or California in general, carrying a gun doesn't seem to be as popular and as an accepted thing as it might be, say, in the state of Texas. Do you approach security any differently than you would, say, in Texas, where people generally walk around? Well, I don't say people generally walk around. That certainly would be a misstatement, but it seems to be much more acceptable to walk around with a gun. Do you handle that differently?
Well, this is Brian. Yeah, you do. I think that, a lot of different malls have in card or gun carrying states, you know, the landlord has a right to allow people on their property who can carry a weapon in the open or whatever it is in the card or the gun carrying states. And, the landlord certainly doesn't want people walking around wearing guns, walking around the mall.
Well,
go ahead, Howard.
Yeah, that raises an interesting issue. I sent an email to all of you. I wrote a few weeks back a blog post, put it in LinkedIn, and I've gotten hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different comments and responses from that, one of which I recently received yesterday, where the gentleman, he raised two very, I think, important issues. One is, he mentioned, whatever you do, don't have a sign that says no guns allowed or conveys that message. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm sorry. This is Jim, Howard.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you know, I think if we just have a restaurant that now has publicized here in Pittsburgh, if you want to come into our restaurant, no guns, and that is their right. Now let's take that. Let's just talk that through for a second. The movie theater in Colorado said no guns. Well, there weren't any guns in there except one person had the gun. You know, this is so complicated. This is probably one of the most complicated things we're ever going to face. If you say no guns, that means every law-abiding citizen will go in there with no gun. The only problem is somebody's going to be in there maybe with a gun to do something evil, and there's no way to stop them.
Well, recently, this Brian, recently there was a situation at a college. I think it was last week. And of course, colleges can't, you know, I'm sure they have a policy you can't carry guns. But two students, you know, one get in a fight with each other, and the student pulls a gun on the other person. That's the situation that could occur in the movie theater, could occur anywhere.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and in Oregon, in the mall, the young man who was the assailant, he was confronted by a customer who was carrying a gun. And I've got to say, all right, let me make it clear. I am not a big fan of everyone walking around with guns. Absolutely not, just so that it's clear. But I just think it's crazy to put up a sign that says no guns.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's crazy or whatever. This, Brian, what it does do, though, is it's a disclaimer. It's notifying the public that this place is a no-gun place. It allows the security and the police to enforce the rules if guns are found on the property. It just gives the public awareness that this is a no-gun policy location, and it allows for more enforcement of the security people and the police when they have to confront somebody that has a weapon.
Well, if we're talking about potential liability, this is a damned if you do and damned if you don't situation. Because I can tell you that if you have a sign up that says no guns there and something happens, someone walks in with a gun and uses the gun, everybody's going to say it was an invitation for a crazy to come in and use it because they felt safer. And if you don't have a sign, people are going to say that it's an invitation anyhow to have everybody. I would think that it would be, if you have a sign, that it would be more of an invitation where people would use a gun in the heat of passion versus someone who's crazy and walks in with the intent to use it. And I use the term crazy in a very perhaps common but not legal way. Dave, what do you think about that?
I think you're right on, Howard. It's very much a double-edged sword in that, a good lawyer on either side of the table is going to argue from his perspective, trying to assign liability if it was essentially a no-gun zone, or if someone had a gun, acted out to protect someone else in the theater. You know that it's going to go around the table trying to name and extract a punishment or money from anybody and everybody there. So it's really, I think, a very difficult situation. And, I think at the end of the day, personally, I defer to this, to the sense of the posting of a no-gun zone and allowing As Brian said, more latitude and ability for those charged with security or safety to enforce it.
Gentlemen, we need to take a break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, I'd like to speak to Brian about what the thought process is, how you make that decision. How do you balance the pros and cons? So we'll be right back in a minute.
Go mobile with the analyst. When the deal changes, and you know it will, be ready whenever, wherever to update property analyses with the analyst. Multi-page reports in seconds sent straight from your mobile device to your client's email. Environmental summaries delivered right to your iPhone or iPad in as little as 10 minutes. Free from your desk at last with the analyst. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Todd Kuhlman, and links to the analyst. If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back. This is CRE Radio, and we're having a very interesting conversation with Brian Cescalini, or Cescalini, David Mystic, and Dr. James Loria on the issue of guns, guards, and alarms, and adding additional security to shopping malls and shopping centers. So when before the break, Brian, I indicated that we probably should talk about this fine balance and how you make a decision on putting up or not putting up a sign that says no guns allowed. What do you consider?
Well, I basically wouldn't make that recommendation to the customer. It is obviously, you know, a decision that the landlord has to make on its own mall. And that I would only recommend that they consult with their insurance company, make the right decision, and basically that would be my role. I do believe that there has to be support for the security staff that has to enforce rules and regulations. And as long as there's a lot of malls have these code of ethics that we have to hand out to kids and other people who are unruly at malls and those kinds of things. But basically, the mall has to have some rules and regulations. And that one's a interesting rule. So I would basically refer to the landlord for making that decision.
Well, okay, you sound like a lawyer.
Yeah.
Spoken
on that one. Like, I'm a contract security guy, so it's a...
let me throw this out. Honestly, I don't like telling my clients what to do when I'm giving them legal advice. I try to take the position that, hey, here are the facts, here's the law. You apply it as you see fit, and I'm sure that you do that. But one of my responsibilities as a lawyer is to try to give the client the triggering events, the facts, the circumstances, and the law so that they can make the correct decision. Is that appropriate for a security firm to at least give the facts to the client so that they can make their decision?
Of course it would be. Absolutely. It would, we would pretty much give our opinion based on our experience, what other malls do, other owners do, how they comply, what state they're in. I think that these signs that you're talking about are mainly basically in states that are gun-carrying states, Arizona, Texas, I believe Oregon, some other states. So, that's a problem. You walk into a restaurant, you see a sign that says, no guns, you go into a liquor store, no guns, they have signs up for that. You walk into a place of employment, no guns, so I think it's a decision that the landlord has to make.
Dr. Loria, that's a lot difficult because let me just stop you there a second. I am really focusing on not saying Dr. Laura. And so if I do slip a little bit, you can reach through the phone and slap me around. So go ahead. Dr.
No, Laura. Go ahead. Yes.
No, I was asking you your input on that.
Well, I think, when Dave mentioned being on that the edge of right and wrong and being second-guessed tomorrow morning, police officers, as a police officer, we do that every day. Shoot, don't shoot. What if I do? What's the outcome of that? We live on that edge continuously. My concern is when it's great to say no guns. However, that bad man is going to take a gun no matter what. I think managers, and I'm sure Brian agrees, and so does Dave. I think you have to tie in with the local police. You have to talk to them about what threats are out there. How am I going to do the training for my security folks? What's the response going to be from the police department? How are they going to respond? What should I be doing if I'm a security person if there is a police response? What are my responsibilities? I have standard of care issues. I have to provide standard of care no matter what I do. So I would sit an owner down, and I would explain every conceivable potential issue to them. And I would help them decide how they're going to provide standard of care to the people coming to their stores. That's kind of the way I do it.
So,
I think one of the challenges in I defer to Brian and Jim on this, but from a property manager's perspective, the training and preparation in a mall especially is so different than in an office building setting, for example, where you've got different ability to control access and more control over the people who are in that building as tenants, or to a large extent it's the same group of people in the building day in and day out, as opposed to disproportionate in a mall of people who are transient shopping, visiting. So I think that when you look at some of the research that's been done about the security measures and training, that it continues to look that one of the big challenges is the really successful security companies and mall operators who have good interface with the first responders and with the local police. But there continues to be a lack of, it appears to be, integration with the retail tenants and the employees. So there's a variety of pieces to the puzzle, I think, that all come together here.
Yeah, and Brian, I could bounce off of that a little bit. Is in more and more you see in major malls, the relationship with the law enforcement agencies is a vital responsibility of the mall owner. And to the point that they provide a lot of police departments with annex-type police departments, space in the mall for officers to operate out of. A lot of police departments, depending on what the mall is and what the crime rate is at the mall, they actually schedule police patrols, or in some cases police are assigned to the mall as well, in addition to the private security or the in-house security. So in most cases, when you see a large mall around Christmas time or during certain parts of the year, police will be assigned to those malls, and they provide the armed presence as well.
Well, that's truly proactive policing. When you see something like that, that's very innovative. That's very pleasurable to see and hear, especially with the resources of the municipal government being so short. Being able to do that is phenomenal. I think it's tremendous.
Let me throw something out. One of the things I love about doing this show is that in part of the conversation, invariably, I think of something that I had not previously considered in preparation for the show. And as I'm listening to the conversation, what people need to do in the event of an incident, I'm really and what will the liability be? How do you make the decision whether or not to put up a sign or not put up a sign? Really, what Brian and Dr. Loria and Dave were talking about, at least from my perception, is liability may not rest so much on what is done in the event of an incident, but what the due diligence was beforehand in trying to determine what you should be doing. That as long as you do adequate due diligence, there is room for just not contemplating everything that can occur. This almost sounds like the Libya incident.
Well, from my perspective, training is the most important thing that any security operation can fall under, and it should be the landlord's primary responsibility to make sure that their in-house security group or their contract security group have the best training, verify that training, and make sure that the training is continuous, and it's not only for the security staff itself, but also training for the retailers, the stores, and what they need to do in case there's a active shooting, on what to do about closing up their stores, you know, ushering people out the back door. The mall security needs to know exactly what to do for the public immediately when there's something that goes over the radio, how to direct people away from the incident, how to evacuate the place, how to save lives. And without that training and without that discipline, the program doesn't work. But for the most part, I would say that every major mall landlord or owner in the country would demand that, and demand nothing less, is to make sure that their security staff and the programs that they have at the mall are ongoing and perfected on a day-by-day basis.
We're gonna hear from Roger now, who's going to tell us about the people who pay the bills around here. And when we come back, I think that we ought to go into the whole discussion of training. We're going to kind of skip the outline a bit, because I think that Brian is really on the nose on that. So bear with us while we hear from Roger.
If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's L-O-G-O-S, the number 2, then L-I-F-E.com, logostolife.com.
Here's an exciting new tool for brokers and investors, RateBlend. RateBlend is a powerful online rent calculator that's quick and easy to use. Print and send detailed, effective rent analyses with a single click. RateBlend is easy to read, so what does your spreadsheet mean goes away. As a web app, RateBlend is accessible from your computer or any mobile device. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Andrew Bermudez, and links to RateBlend. Try it today.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Actually, I'm going to... let's stick with the training, and after we talk about training, we'll then get into the conversation of whether or not guards should be armed or not. So let's talk a little bit about training a bit. What are mall and shopping center operators, what should they do in terms of training and then coordination with the tenants? Because to me, that's just a major issue.
Well, Brian is speaking. It has to do a lot with the program, and the program can be shared with the security department and the security director, who would do the ongoing training and with the security guards, the professionals out there. But they would also solicit the help of outside consultants and police departments, who would come in and give security awareness programs to its tenants, to the storekeepers, and then it would also be the responsibility of loss prevention companies or the departments in the different companies if they have them. I'm not going to mention any names, but a lot of store chains have loss prevention people that also provide the training. So there's a lot of coordination with the security department, the police department, and the loss prevention people to make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Dr. Loria?
Well, I like to go in and do an audit. You know, I like to sit with the owner, and I like to look at all the potential problems we face, and then set off to meet with the local police chief and talk to him about the same thing that the operator. I want to make sure that the operator and the local police are on really the same page as it corresponds to this large group of people. Then I start off and I begin to talk about disaster preparedness, organizational-wide disaster preparedness, which is circumspects. That's their focus. They do a great job with that. Then we start talking about training. What kind of training are we doing here? You know, are we going to have to do active shooter training? Is that what we're going to worry about? What is our focus going to be? And then develop a curriculum. And then have the owner sit down and explain to them, this is the curriculum that we think will work specifically for this retail establishment, and then set off and put hours to it, and then attach what's most significant. And we have to talk about it is money. You know, what? This is the investment that operator and owner have to make. And that's significant.
When we're talking about training, aren't we also talking about drilling, and we're talking about repetition? Because if you have a drill on what to do in the event that there's some nut who walks in with a gun, and you do that once a year, how effective is something like that?
Once a year doesn't work, Howard. When you talk about training, you talk about static training, fluid training, and dynamic training. This is when you're talking about training individuals. Static training is me showing you. Fluid is having you do it maybe at 50% of speed. And then the dynamic fluid, the dynamic training is go at it completely all out. So we train, we exercise specific little parts, and then we bring it all together in one significant training event, then look at it and evaluate it and hot wash it and see what we did right, wrong, what has to be adjusted, go back, adjust it, go back to another major drill, and then set up a drill schedule for the year. You can't do it one time. That doesn't work.
Dave, now, you're the disaster preparedness guy. You're the one who prepares everybody what to do, not necessarily how to prevent these things from happening, but what to do in the event that it happening it happens. What's your take on this?
Well, I think that very much in line with what Jim just said, that you have to have, when you come in from whatever consulting discipline that you're coming at this from, whatever chair around the table, that the most important thing is that it has to be a collaborative event. You have to, every building has its own unique set of issues, whether it's because of its the type of use or its geography or the particular building systems are like safety systems. So it really takes understanding the building, the tenants, the occupancy, looking at what those particular risks are and collaborating with the folks that are there. Because we all bring a certain amount of expertise, but from the user's end, they have to be intimately involved in developing the identifying the issues, developing the strategies, and then exercising to those issues. We were involved with a client actually back in the hometown in Pittsburgh on a mixed use property that was retail and state offices. And the building manager attempted to put the entire plan together and not ever interact with the state office users in the building. And you're just, at some point, you want to beat your head against the wall and say, writing a plan is nothing. A plan not exercised, not trained, not had collaborative pieces to it is worthless. It's an exercise. It's check the box. It's put it on the shelf. So it's only as good as the collaboration, the exercise, then coming back to gap analysis, to what we need to change, kind of after action analysis, and being able to fine tune that. That's the only way. You can't have everybody scratching their head trying to think about what were we supposed to do. And a lot of times, I think there was an interesting study done by the Institute of Justice on mall security a number of years ago where in that survey, I think they said fewer than 15% of the 200 and some malls interviewed, I believe, mall security directors said that they actually were involved at that point of training with the tenants. Now, it's improved since then, but I still think that's probably one of the challenges.
Well, that was really the moment where I decided I needed to write a blog post. It was shortly after the Oregon shooting, and I was watching on TV an interview with a young man who was working behind a cosmetic counter and a woman customer, and they were in some large, could have been a Macy's at one end of the mall, typical large tenant. I don't know that it was Macy's, although it might have been. And they talked about when the shooting was going on at their end of the mall, and when they heard the shooting, he was behind the counter and helped her hide behind the counter. But in the conversation, it was him just reacting out of his own sense of helping someone else. that there didn't seem to be any training as to what to do. And that was my approach in my original blog posting was, well, gosh, there should be some coordination here that not only should the mall security, but even if there's security in this large retail tenant, everybody should be trained as to what to do. It was fortunate that in their case, he instinctively did the right thing, but you can't count on that.
That's exactly right. We all don't have that instinct.
That's correct. Someone might have the instinct to jump over the counter and start running towards the shooting, which probably could be just as bad as anything else.
Well, the problem that is we live in a very litigious society, and everyone has to consider liability and who's responsible for the training and who should conduct the training and so forth. And when a landlord steps over that gray area boundary of going in and start training the retailer, there's a gray area there. And who's responsible for training the retailer? The retailer themselves or the security mall owner? And I would be safe to say that it shouldn't be the mall owner, because if something does happen, like you said, and someone does something wrong, then who's liable?
You know, do you do nothing?
You don't do nothing, but you try to coordinate with the retailer and their loss prevention department to conduct the proper training or coordinate with the security director or the security or the landlord at the mall to make sure everyone's on the same page, as I was discussing earlier, whether it's the police will come in and give the recommendation or whatever. But my goal is to get everyone on the same page. However,
that's
that gets done.
That police department, I think, will have a philosophy of what they would like the retailer to tell their employees. Think about it from a college perspective. We, in college policing, have to give some sort of a direction to everybody so we know when we're responding what that is that I see coming at me. So I have to know what options I've given the students. And it's critical that I do that. I can't have them doing something that I'm not prepared for. It could be disastrous in the midst of disaster.
Well,
I think that the more proactive the landlord is, the more proactive the security department is in every different situation makes a big difference. Whether it's literature, whether it's the involvement of a police department, whether it's consultancy or just the proactive nature of the landlord to want to do as much training and get everyone on the same page as possible, because as the one gentleman said earlier, you can't do it just once a year. It has to be continually. There's turnover in the stores. There's turnover even on the guard staff. There's turnover with a bunch of different people who one day or one week from now, there could be a whole new crew of people in a retail store somewhere. So the training has to be constant, and it's really the responsibility of everybody to try and I keep going back to try and get on the same page.
Right,
and it's
Howard,
up to the landlord to promote that.
Yeah, I think that part of what gets overlooked here is that really goes back to the owner, the management company, in terms of also looking at lease language and what they are requiring of the tenant in terms of producing their own, emergency plan, or what are they doing internally to have a plan, have any of their own training, or even just at a very high level awareness for their employees, because there is a certain amount of that I don't want to call risk transfer. I mean, ultimately we're looking at not checking the boxes so that we put the attorneys in a box, but so that create the safest environment we can. But I think that we're often don't take advantage of some things we could drive through in the leases from the landlord perspective.
Well, that's actually grist for another whole show that I would think that I'm particularly qualified is lease language. And we're going to be having a few other attorneys on to talk about the lease language from the tenant's perspective, the landlord's perspective, and the insurer's perspective. Unfortunately, we can't really in detail address all of these issues. But, Dave, just from what you're saying, and I'm thinking that, yes, before anybody writes any lease language, they really need to consult with the security experts. It probably is no longer safe to say you're responsible for all of your own security, and I wash my hands of it. That would be nice.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that you can effectively do that any longer, and it probably depends upon the state and whether or not the state start imposing some sort of legislative, hopefully they don't, some sort of legislative direction, although some direction might be helpful to get some sort of bright line that we can work with. Well, it's time for another break, so why don't we take a break, and when we come back, to the extent that we haven't hit on this issue, I had an earlier conversation with Brian where Brian was talking about the kind of incidents that we're really talking about and who and what are we really talking about protecting against, whether it be intentional acts of harm to individuals or whether or not it's theft or loss control, etc. So why don't we take a short break, and we will be back in a few moments.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. Tacticsmagazine.com.
Techniques Marketing can help you do more business with your biggest clients. We've developed exciting ways to increase your revenue streams with your key accounts, way beyond mere trial and error. And we've done it for some of the biggest companies in America. If you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, we should talk. Techniques Marketing, TECH, that's the tech, NIQUES, there you've got your Neeks, TechniquesMarketing.com.
Go mobile with the analyst. When the deal changes, and you know it will, be ready whenever, wherever, to update property analyses with the analyst. Multi-page reports in seconds sent straight from your mobile device to your client's email. Environmental summaries delivered right to your iPhone or iPad in as little as 10 minutes. Free from your desk at last with the analyst. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Todd Kuhlman, and links to the analyst.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guest, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
We're on the show with Dr. James Loria, Dave Mystic, and Brian Cescalini. So actually, we were going to talk about what you're protecting against, but before we do that, let's get to something that I think a lot of people wanted to talk about, is should the guards be armed or not? And is there an advantage or disadvantage? Who wants to raise their hand first?
Well, Brian, you are most of the security guys, and you have that company. What do you think?
Well, my company, is the fifth largest security company in the United States. It's we employ about 22,000 security guards nationwide, and the number of armed guards that we currently employ is probably close to the neighborhood of 200 employees that are armed. If you looked at the security industry as a whole, I would say that the armed guard service need in the industry is somewhere in the 1 to 2%. So the industry or the need for armed guards, certainly our world is changing, but the ratio of guards, armed guards to unarmed guards is very, very low. And so from my perspective, I don't think it is a situation where the world or the United States has to move towards armed guard service.
Dave? Don't be chicken.
I think don't be chicken. I think that the most important thing going on from a security perspective that we really get is from my perspective, is the visibility of the guard and their awareness that they bring to the situation. So I think that in a lot of public instances, my own personal druthers are good presence, good training, and awareness. And although I think that there are time and occasion when having the armed guard is a benefit, I think I err in the other direction as a beginning point.
And Dr. Loria? Did we lose Dr. Loria? Wow, boy, that talk about chickening out.
I concur that,
him.
You know. Well, this is Brian.
Go ahead.
I concur that the use of armed guard service is really reserved for circumstances that really require that type of presence. But the most I think that to round out what we're talking about is that one of the biggest. Probably the change in the industry and where training has come from is that active shooter training is probably the one training function that has changed. Where over the years we have had numerous training programs that are pretty basic, and they don't change from year to year, other than repetition and refining the training and so forth. But active shooter has become one of the most important training segments. And I think every security company, every landlord has taken that into consideration in making sure that their security staff and the people who are responsible for the lives and safety of people actually have that training and take that serious.
Yeah. So, Dr. Loria, you're back with us now.
Yes,
because
I am.
I had just asked you a question and you disappeared on us. I'm assuming it wasn't intentional.
Don't take it as an intentional act, Howard.
You are very good. It was just, you did a great job. So, really, my question to you is before you disappear again, what. Do you think there are instances in which security guards are appropriate?
Armed security, yeah, I do, actually. I do. But again, that needs to be caveated by a number of issues. Where are they? for example, in our world, in law enforcement, there are security officers that protect hospitals, schools. Those are the folks with the proper training and credentialing would be the first responders to an active shooter. So in some instances, an armed security agent, is, in my mind now, is appropriate. With the proper training and credentials as a police chief, I'm comfortable with that.
That's the big caveat. Proper training and credentials. And there obviously are varying degrees of training and credentials. From my perspective, if you felt that there was a need for an armed security guard, an ex-Secret Service agent, I'd feel more comfortable with than someone who went to a vocational school and had 3 months' worth of training.
Well, you know, like, exactly. And in talking about that, here's in most states, you know, the training for to get your gun permit as a security officer is 40 hours. And one time at the range to shoot your scores and get your card. Well, in my opinion, you know, that's not enough training. You can get your gun permit, but that doesn't make you a professional at what you do. And that's where the training comes in, and a selection process of who are your officers or professionals that are trained to carry weapons, and not to just select someone who has a gun permit to work in an environment where it could be more dangerous for the public than it is for himself. And so training and the selection process of who does carry weapons and represent the landlord and represent the security company is the most important thing that everybody needs to stay concerned with.
Dave, we've kind of cut you out of this a bit. Let me ask you this question. What are you preparing people for from a disaster preparedness, if something happens, you know, someone comes in and starts shooting up an office building or mall, what's the general direction that you take them?
Well, I think that the guys would agree that, number one, it's a matter of, again, collaboration, of bringing together whatever security force is used on site, whether it's in-house or contract security, with the police chief or whoever is the community outreach officer that would be involved. But it's so important to have that dialogue and bring the professionals to the table for that discussion. And I think one of the challenges is for the property manager that not to be threatened by the discussion. You know, oftentimes we see a manager who is worried about being exposed by not having considered the issues or not having properly, you know, created the proper policy or document. And you really, you have to put the a little bit of the ego aside and know that what you're working for is for the greater community good or the corporate good, and be willing to make your mistakes in that group in collaboration and in the exercises so that, you know, you really get to that level, as you discussed earlier, being consciously, unconsciously competent. So.
Okay. So we've got one last short break, and then we're going to have our final conversation, and we are going to raise the issue of what are we protecting against. And also I want to have a brief conversation of the cost factor, because that certainly is very relevant. So let's take a little break.
Techniques Marketing can help you do more business with your biggest clients. We've developed exciting ways to increase your revenue streams with your key accounts, way beyond mere trial and error. And we've done it for some of the biggest companies in America. If you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, we should talk. Techniques Marketing, TECH, that's the tech, NIQUES, there you've got your Neeks, TechniquesMarketing.com.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Okay, welcome back to CRE Radio. Well, that was a short break. So, Brian, you had mentioned this active shooter training. In reality, I mean, we hear about this stuff on the news, and it's shocking when someone goes to a school and shoots up people or goes into a mall or, you know, any number of different things. What is it that you deal with most of the time? You don't really deal with that kind of violence. You deal with other types of violence in malls. You and I briefly talked about it. And if you would just talk about it now a little bit.
Well, going back to the general ambassador of the mall, is the security officer is responsible for a variety of issues, and mainly is public safety. And that means they're looking for issues that might present slip and falls. They're trying to deter and prevent burglaries out in the parking areas. They're acting as ambassadors to direct people to different locations. Mainly, though, is their responsibility is to be a huge visible deterrence and to have trained eyes and ears of the property so that and be in communication with the command center and everyone in most malls, in fact, all malls, everybody is on the same frequency where the engineer, the property management, the cleaning people, and various other role players all communicate together so that if there is an emergency that everybody jumps into action. It's just not just the security department itself.
Well, most of the situations, the violent situations, wouldn't they be more robbery related rather than an active shooter situation?
Well, in most cases, it would be a robbery situation. It would be most likely a shoplifting situation, and then probably the easiest and issue would have to be with a congregation of teenagers who, generally get in trouble and go to malls and get into a lot of trouble. But as it pertains to possible scenarios of violence, it could be general arguments. It could be a gang-related situation that malls attract people because there's restaurants and theaters and various type of outlets that create a lot of congregation of large groups of people. So there's those issues.
Well, I'm sure some of that is going to be, as long as you have people, you have domestic violence issues. You have relationship issues. You have drugs, alcohol. So those folks in there are facing some significant social issues. So they have to be equipped to deal with it. De-escalation skills, intervention skills. So it's not just security where you're checking doors and checking windows. I think it's a little bit more involved in that.
Yes, I agree. For the most part, checking doors and windows is really secondary, you know, to really what the role is of the security professional.
What about the cost issue? How do you measure the benefit versus the cost?
Well, the one, if you're looking for a return on investment of your security force in training and hiring the right person or choosing the correct security company, that return on investment will come the day there is an incident and that security force intervenes, quells it, no one's hurt. That's when you look at that return on investment.
Well, and I think one of the other pieces that often goes unseen or unmentioned is that, you know, a well-developed plan, a well-trained organization will result in better insurance premium for the property owner. You know, we're very involved with a variety of brokers around the country who routinely are very consultative in their approach and diagnostic in their risk management, and are usually able, with a comprehensive plan and a well-exercised plan and an organized team like Brian's group would bring to the table or we bring to the table, to affect typically a 6 and a 12% savings on the insurance premium by getting special credits from the underwriter.
No.
So as Jim said, lots of times everybody says, well, what's the ROI? What's the ROI? Well, you have to look at it a little bit differently, but know that this is a vehicle for the savings here on the insurance side can be some dollars that can be further invested to improve the security and to offset the cost of improving and developing it.
Mm. I think that's a huge issue, and that's something that we really are not equipped to talk about that much during this show, is the insurance component. The insurance component has got to be a very substantial element to anything that anybody does in terms of ensuring the safety of everyone who's in the mall.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that. Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, the main thing is that when you talk about the insurance and cost benefit and everything else, let's not forget that a safe place and a safe environment is one thing, but a reputation is another. And if a place, a business, or a mall has a bad reputation, then that hurts economically the mall and everyone that works there. And so, you know, it's vitally important to keep in mind that the safety and the perception of safety at any place, any environment, whether it's a shopping center or an office building or a stadium, you have to work very hard on investing in the reputation of that project to make sure that's safe, and that's where a serious consideration to security and how the program works and making sure it works is not to be forgotten.
I would say absolutely. Just think of Dodger Stadium and what the reaction was after that young man from San Francisco was beaten. The reaction and the efforts to ensure the perception of security was very, very important then. So,
and look what the aftermath of that was, just millions of dollars in security upgrades and millions of dollars worth of police activity and everything else just to bring the reputation back. You lose your reputation, you lose everything. And I think that's why mall owners have to constantly be vigilant of their security programs and constantly have to make sure that it stays high priority, because we all fall in the sense of of complacency, and things don't happen, and then your security drills and your security training and those things wane, and if that does happen, then a major incident that's unexpected can really occur, and that's it's one of those black swans where you don't expect it to happen, and it happens, and then you're not ready for it.
Mm. One last question. So if you're walking in a mall and you're a customer and you hear gunfire, what do you do? Maybe this is a stupid question, but let's start with the customer and then say what do you do if you're also an employee in one of the stores.
There's a bunch of different philosophies, Howard. One philosophy that has been taught and continues to be taught is run, hide, fight. If you could run, run. If you have to hide, hide very well. If all else fails, be prepared to fight.
And I think that's natural instinct. Well, actually, it probably varies from person to person. Dave or Brian, you have any thoughts on that?
Sure, I do. Just Brian, just like the gentleman said, is that run, hide, fight. But the situation is run where? A lot of malls, as they architecturally design their malls, there's emergency exits, there's places to hide, there's places to go. But the one thing is that's where the security force has to work really well, is to direct the people from not running the wrong way and running into areas where there's safe refuge. And as for the store, they do a pretty good job where they would lock up and keep who's ever in the store, inside the store, and out the back into the back corridors or whatever the case may be. But, there's has to be a well-defined evacuation plan. But as well as if you're just a customer that's just walking the mall and there's gunshots, then you have to find a place of safety.
Gotta hide.
And people tend to run in the direction where other people run. And that may not necessarily be the safest thing to do.
Oh. You know, I'm listening to all this, and I'm walking away from this show with incredible admiration for the three of you, and with my head almost hurting trying to figure out answers. And I just can't be – there's no simple or one answer. It was pretty clear. To any of this. Anybody have any additional comments that you would like to say before we close the show?
Well, with me being Brian, is I think that I think everyone in this day and age has to find a way to make themselves more aware and to be more expectant of unnatural things to go wrong around them. And when they go to an airport or if they go to a mall, they should, make themselves aware. That's the general public. So awareness training, awareness in general, but also I think the most important thing that I think in this entire session here today was I think training is much more important than anything else.
Yeah, I would like to add that it seems to me if I could whittle everything down to the three major components, it would be due diligence, it would be training and repetition.
And preparedness.
Well, that to me,
right,
that's
that
preparedness. That's Dave, you have anything else to add?
No, I think that you've hit the nail right on the head, and it is, as the guys have said, preparedness, it's training, it's getting to the point where it's part of who we are and what we do and not some separated task that
Dr. Loria? Or should I call you, now that the show's over, Jim, James, or Dr. Loria?
You can call me anything. Jim works. I was Jim long before I was Dr. Anything.
Yeah, there you go. Jim, any final comments?
Well, you know, I could speak for hours on the subject of all of this, but we have to be prepared. Brian said it. David does it for a living. We have to be prepared. As much as, and as ugly as that sounds, and how people turn their, it turns their stomach, we have to be prepared.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So we are going to be having two other shows over the next 6 months. I haven't figured out exactly when. Brian, you were going to turn me on to someone who could discuss the insurance issues. And so we'll have a show that relates this, and maybe you gentlemen can join us again on that show. And then we're going to have a show having to do with lease language, and I'd like to see if you'd like to join us for that, where we will drill down on those topics in as much detail as we can within an hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half. If anybody's listening, you can go to our website, and the contact information for each of our speakers are there. I certainly would encourage you to contact them with any questions or comments, or if you want to hire any of them or Universal Protection. Certainly, you've got some really bright people who can help you here. Does anyone have any speaking engagements coming up in the foreseeable future?
I have coming up March the 7th and 8th for the group of brokers who are known as a organic growth engine here in Orlando, some training on continuity planning and risk assessment.
Oh, outstanding. And Jim?
Well, I'm always doing something. I'm a teacher, and I'm a police officer, so I'm always active, and it is what it is. I'm good to go.
Oh, also, if I might, and Justin will be very proud of me to mention this, you can leave your comments right on creradio.com/security. Which will take you right to the particular page for this show, and you can leave your comments there, or you can leave a comment on Twitter with the @CREradio. Certainly, we encourage people to contact us directly. Our future shows, we've got a California legislative update coming up February 8th with Rex Heim. If you haven't... listen to Rex. He's the man who knows everything about what's going on in the California State Legislature as it relates to commercial real estate. I've heard him often. He's a character. I've actually walked the halls of the California State Legislature and U.S. Congress with him. Wonderful speaker, right to the point. Also, we are doing a show on February 22nd with Ira Meslick and Joel Hall. Ira is a very well-known blog writer and attorney, and Joel is an attorney who has represented Apple stores and The Gap, and we will be talking about what it actually takes to get a lease signed rather than just all of the talking. And then we've got a really interesting show coming up March. Well, it's not like the other shows aren't interesting. but we have an interesting show on cold calling for commercial brokers. And Rod Santamassimo is going to be on the show. Rod is a noted author and lecturer for real estate brokers. And Michael Dernerin, our own Michael Dernerin, who has been in marketing with CBS Radio, and he's my producer for the radio show. And I'll be participating, obviously, in that show because I do have some cold calling experience, or maybe warm calling experience. So with that, gentlemen, I really, really thank each and every one of you for participating in the show. Really, this was a good show, and I'd like to invite you back at the earliest opportunity. Thank you very much. And Roger, why don't we go ahead and close the show?
This has been CRE Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a topic you would like to discuss, Howard can be reached at 949-288-3707. That's area 949-288-3707. Or by email to howard@creradio.com. CRE Radio is a live and recorded radio show accessible from both the web and your smartphone. Visit creradio.com to download any broadcast anytime or to receive newsletters and updates from Howard. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the sole intent of educating our listeners. Howard and his guest conversations specifically do not intend to offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, we recommend you seek out your own counsel. Remember, laws and practices may vary from state to state. Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Unauthorized editing or copying of portions of this show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.